We are on Vav Amud Aleph Vav Rav Amud Beis. We're really on Amud Beis by now. I gave you a table at the top of the sheet, which really just sums up what we did last week and puts it in a form that I'm hoping will help. We had started talking about a chick that hatched on Yom Tov, and Rav had said it's Asur. And the reason that we assumed it would be Asur would be Mukta. So you see on the table, unfortunately the bold didn't come out on the table, so it's a little hard to tell. But the top line, obviously going across the top row, is just the headings. And then the cases are on the left side. So in the case where the egg hatches, we said it's subject to a machlokes, right? And Rav says Asur because it's Mukta. Shmuel, or Rabbi Yochanan, said it's mutter with shechita, and we gave the Pnei Yeshua's explanation of what that means last time, the idea that it wasn't the muktzah issue, because Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan follow Rabbi Shimon. It was a nolad issue, and nothing really happened to change its status when it was born, because what changes its status is only the shechita that it's going to undergo later. Last time we talked about the question of, would you be allowed to shecht it hypothetically inside the egg? Could you have done that? That's actually what we're going to talk about, God willing, today. But that's the position of Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, is that it is mutter. That would be the idea. So along came Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, and they issued a challenge to Rav. And their challenge is that you're telling me this is Asur, but a calf that's born from a healthy cow can be shafted on Yom Tov. And everybody agrees with that across the board. There's no debate, as you see going across the row. Right, the third row on the table, everybody says it's mutter because you could have just as easily shouted its mother when Yom Tov started. So why should this be any different? That was the challenge that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi put to Rav, to which the answer was, that's different because the calf could have been mutter with the shechita of the mother. That doesn't apply in the egg case. To which we then asked a second question, what about a calf born from a treifa on Yom Tov, which everybody agrees is mutter. So Rav there is silent. Rav doesn't answer. So along come Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, and that's the column all the way to the right on the table. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef say, we agree with Rav, the egg that hatches is Asur. As far as the calf from a treifa that we say is mutter, and everybody agrees is mutter, that's mutter because you could have fed the mother, the treifa mother, you could have fed it to the dogs on Yom Tov. So so that's why it's the young is going to be considered mukhan, it's going to be considered ready for people to eat. Just like the mother was ready for the dogs, therefore it's not mukta, the young that was inside it also isn't mukta. That was the answer that Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef gave.
It still has to be shepherd.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
Not like the Tekua, right?
Correct. No, its mother was a treifa.
Right.
So Abaye then challenges that, and he says, well, wait a minute, human food is not considered mukhan for dogs, so dog food shouldn't be mukhan for human beings. The fact that it was inside a treifa that you could feed to the dogs doesn't mean that the young is now going to be mutter for people. That was Abaye's challenge, to which Rabbi Rabbi Yosef said, no, that's not a problem, because you have to look at the logic. That which was eligible for people is not eligible for dogs. That I agree with, because people don't take human food and give it to animals. Leave aside whatever may go on in our bizarre society, but classically, historically, you didn't give person food to animals. The other way around, though, if you have something that was dog food and turns out to be edible for people, matovu manam, great, now I have dinner. That's the way that they look at it in the Gemara, and that concludes the debate. That concludes the discussion. The Gemara now offers us brisos supporting each side. Rav and Shmuel / Rabbi Yochanan. And that's what we're going to start with before we go back to the question that we started on last time at the end of how to interpret Rav's silence and how we're going to paskin. So
just one question.
Yeah.
The egg according to Arthur is mukta. It's not an egg that was lachila. It was an egg that was here to...
to hatch.
Right, to
correct.
No, but otherwise it would not be...
Right, but it couldn't have been lachila if there was a live chicken side. Mm-hmm. How would you have eaten it?
No, then you would have prepared. If the
egg from the chicken.
It would not have been mokta because you would have prepared it for food. Eventually.
You're thinking about the mother.
Right.
But the egg was out of the mother already before Yom Tov started. Yeah. So we're now about 10, 11 lines down on above in the base. Tanya Kavasei de Rav, Tanya Kavasei de Shmuel v'Tamar of Yochanan. I have a brisa supporting Rav that in fact this egg, the chick that hatches out of the egg is Asur. I have a brisa supporting Shmuel and of Yochanan that the chick that hatches out of this egg is Mutter. Tanya Kavasei de Rav, here's the brisa supporting Rav. Egel shenolad b'yom tov Mutter. Calf born on Yom Tov is allowed. Ephroach shenolad b'yom tov Asur. And sure enough, the chick that comes out of the egg is us. Uma hefresh bein zeh lazeh. The Braisa asks, what's the difference? Zeh muchan agav imo b'shchita. One is ready with its mother because you can shech the mother and have the young, like we've talked about. V'zeh eino muchan agav imo, where the chick has no such permission. Okay, that's the Braisa supporting Rav. Tanya kavasi d'shmuel v'temer v'yochan. The Braisa in the other direction. Egel shenolad b'yom tov is Mutter, calf born on Yom Tov is Mutter, but Ephroch shenolad b'yom tov Mutter, and so is the chick born, hatched out of the egg on Yom Tov. My time, or why? Zeh muchan agav imo, because the calf is Mutter with its mother with Shechita, v'zeh matir atzmo b'shechita. And the other one permits itself via the Shechita, and as we saw in the Pnei Yoshua. Okay, so the question then is, how do we take Rav's silence in response to Rav Kahana and Rav Asi? So the Rosh notes that in fact you could read it as agreement or as not agreement. If you take a look on your sheets at Source Aleph, we saw this at the end.
But the reason given in the second brisa is not the reason consistent with what we gave for why Rav and Rav Yosef held it the...
They hold it usher.
They hold it usher, I'm sorry. They hold it usher.
Right. It is consistent with Shmuel
Rabbi
Yochanan.
So is Shmuel Rabbi. It is consistent.
So, Source Aleph brings you Gemara from Bava Basra, which we saw at the end last time. It's talking about a sale of property and trying to determine what exactly has been sold in a case in which the borders were defined in unusual ways. Remember, we talked about that. It's a rectangle property, and the border on one side goes here, and the border on the other side goes all the way down there, and so on. And Rashbam said in Source Base, on Umo de Rav, when Rav agrees there, Rav's agreement, it says, is on a separate case, not on the first case that was mentioned. First, it says Shasik Rav to case number one, Umo de Rav to case number two. So the Rashbam wrote, Umo de Rav mekame de ishtik. Rav agreed before he was silent, meaning when it says Umo de Rav, Rav had agreed only in case two, until he was silent regarding case one. Ava baser de ishtik odi bitravayu. But once we saw that he was silent on case number one, the answer is he really agreed on both. So in other words, shtika, his silence there, is taken as hodah. It's taken as agreement. That's the way that Rashbam takes it. We saw that last time. Tosfos has a different view. If you take a look at Source Gimel, Tosfos quotes the Rashbam, Pirish Bekuntros, Kodim Sheshasak. The way that Rashbam took it was when it said, and Rav agreed, regarding case number two, that was before he was silent on case number one. And Mashma, Dibishasak, Modulo, the indication is then that ultimately he's silent even on case one. Avagab de la Kaman, Shasak la Abaye, Avagab de Loho de Lo, Elash lo Chash la Hashiva. He says, granted that we're going to see a case later of a Hodah to Abaye, later in Bava Basra, in which there is silence that is not agreement. He just doesn't think it's worth answering Abaye. You won't say that here, because Rav Kahana and Rav Asi havu kamo talmid chaver l'rav. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are on such a level that they are like colleagues to Rav, or quasi-colleagues to Rav. If he was silent, it isn't because he didn't think they were worth responding to. If he was silent, it was because he agreed. That would be. It reminds me of the story that I had when I was 18 years old or so. I was in Israel studying Keren Biavne, and we were staying in an apartment with friends for Shabbos in Rechavia, right down the block from the yeshiva of Rav Gusman Zatzal, Netzach Yisrael, who was on the corner of Ibn Ezra and Ramban. So we're sitting in Shalashudis, And the discussion turns, as it's wont to turn when you're in yeshiva in Israel, to the discussion about whether you wear a hat or don't wear a hat for davening, Shabbos, whatever it was. I was a Fabrender non-hat wearer. I felt I had gone through the sources and it wasn't required. And Rav Gusman was known in his yeshiva for requiring that you had to wear a hat to be in the yeshiva. So one of the fellows who's there with me sitting at Shalashudis says to me, I dare you to go ask Rav Gusman what the halacha is on this. And for those who don't know who Rav Gusman was, he passed away now several years ago. He wrote the set of Sfarim Kuntrasei Shiurim al Hashas. He was the Chavrusa of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz back in Europe. And the story goes about their Chavrusa that when they got tired, like 1:32 in the morning or so, they played a game. And the game that they played was that one would say Tesvav, and the other one would then be responsible to tell them what was on Daf Tesvav in every Masechta and Shas. That's who you're talking about. But, you know, when you're 18, you do dumb things. So we marched down the block to the yeshiva, and I went over to Rav Gusman, and he's sitting there learning something. I don't remember what it was that he was learning. And he looks up, and I said, you know, in Hebrew I asked him, is there an obligation to wear a hat when davening? He looks at me, and he says, Cain. And he goes back to his learning. So I retreat back to my friends. And the Mashkiach Ruchani there in the yeshiva comes over. He wants to know what's going on. And he asks what's going on and told him what was going on. And I said to him, I would love to ask for like references, some Ma'ar Makomos on it, but I'm afraid to. So he said, no, go ahead. He was having fun. But he says, go ahead. So I go back up to him. And I say, is it possible for the yeshiva to give Ma'ar Makomos on this? And he says, Ani lo yodea. He goes back to his learning. That's what I think of when I hear this tosfos. Lo chash, certain things you don't need to respond to. The encounter.
So from then, did you wear a hat after, or you did?
Not from then, but eventually.
Well, that was when you were still a blocker.
Yeah, very much so. In every sense of the word. Yeah. That was then. So, going back to what you see here. Well, you can look. I put it in the weekly halach and the bayit bulletin a few weeks ago. Ayin Shum. So, the Tosfos says that it depends on the one to whom one is responding. If he's a Talmud Chaver and he's silent, that means that he actually agreed. The Chacham Tzvi takes up this question as well. And the Chacham Tzvi says, if you take a look at Zoras Dalet, he says, Sha'ani Hasam, he's talking about the Beitza case. What happens is, his general statement is, that if someone says a din, he says a law, and the other is silent, then silence constitutes agreement, Shehodah. Whereas, if someone asks a question, or poses a challenge from some source that is really a completely separate discussion, and someone else is silent, it's because he considers it obvious. He says, the answer is that your proof is not a proof, your question is not a question, and therefore I'm not going to bother to answer it. So it depends on whether he's answering or not answering an assertion of din or a question. So the Chacham Tzvi says that here, it's clearly hodah. In our discussion, it's clearly hodah. And take a look at source Dalit. He says, Sha'ani Hasan. He says, in our case, it has to be hoda. Why? Mideheshiv lahem ala kushya harishona. Ma bein zeh le'egel sheno le'biyomto. Because the first question that they asked him was the question of the young born to a healthy calf on Yom Tov, and there he did answer. V'lo al hashniya, but he didn't answer on the second one about the treifa. Muchach de oduye odile. So you know that demonstrates that in fact he was agreeing.
This is kind of like we said last week, where we said that in one case, if he wanted to show he disagreed, he'd be forced to say something because they were refuting his position. Whereas in Baba Basra, I think we said that it was more of a svara. In other words, one of the cases we cited, it was more of a svara. In other words, he could have been
lying. It wasn't from a source.
It wasn't from a source. It wasn't a direct refutation of his position. So therefore, you're the svara, I'm the svara. I don't have to respond. What am I going to do? Respond to your svara.
Right. Interesting. It's certainly another approach to it. I haven't seen anyone suggest
it. Seems similar. It seems almost identical to what he's saying, really.
Well, no, because what he's saying is more an argument for context. If he has already answered the first one, and he now doesn't answer the second one, that indicates to me that he must have changed his mind. He engaged right. them.
But this lack of response is almost indicative of the Haidah, because...
Right, because of the prior.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Right. So you only limits it if you have this. If you had a direct other kind of refutation without a first and a second. If you had a straight refutation, what would the Chacham Tzvi hold?
So Chacham Tzvi would then say it depends on whether it was a question or whether it was an assertion. If it was a question from some other source, it could be that he didn't think that that was even worth addressing.
Right.
Whereas if someone comes to you and says the halacha is X and you don't answer, that shows you agree. The Lavush in the back of our Gemara has a different answer. He says it could be that he was silent for a different reason. His answer initially regarding the calf from a healthy cow was that the reason why the calf born from a healthy cow was mutter is because it was ready within the mother. Right? That was the answer. Muchan agavimo. So when they ask from the Trefa case, when they say, well, then why is it mutter there? His answer logically is, well, it was ready for the dogs, which is in fact what Rabbi Rav Yosef came up with as an answer. It's almost a logical extension of what he had said before. There was no need for him to say anything. It's like the answer is trivial. Once you know what I told you in the answer to the first question, you know the answer to the second question. And therefore, I don't need to waste time giving you this response. You can figure it out for yourself. So that's Lavush's take.
Is that a chutzpah? Is that an answer? Because isn't the question is worthy of a response? Like, isn't that like a busha?
It's very consistent with the style that you see in the Gemara. In other words, the Gemara is very much tough love on the Talmidim. When you see like someone like Rabbi Yochanan say, "Poke tini levra," right? Go teach that outside. Something like that. Like the Gemara is not. They don't coddle the Talmidim.
Even though this, today's stuff, you already said they have to send friends to make the teacher be nicer to the student, no?
Yeah. I'll be fine. Go another couple of daf and you'll see something else on the top of your daf.
But here he was shosik to a contemporary, to an equal. He was shosik to an equal here.
Yeah. Right, well, that was the point. That was
the point earlier.
Right.
The
Although maybe the Lavush would borrow that and say, no, he doesn't answer him because he says, you know full well.
I'm not very sure.
So
Rav will change his mind according
to... So according to Chacham Tzvi, Rav changed his mind. According to Tosis and Bava Basra, it seems like Rav would have changed his mind.
So he would say...
According to Lavush, he did not change his mind.
Right.
So how do we hold? What do we actually do here? So the Rush gives us a couple of points here. If you take a look at source Hay.
Well, hold on, does Lavush say he was quiet because he could have answered, an obvious answer, he could have fed the mother to the dogs and therefore it's mutter, or he actually changes his mind and
His answer is that the Trefa case is not the same thing as our case, because in the Trefa case it was Mukham Laklav.
And in our case,
it's not.
On the Trefa case, it's Mukham Laklav.
Right.
So in source Hay, look what the Rush does. He says, "V'harav alfa zalo kasav hilchsa kaman." The Rif didn't paskin. Who do we follow in terms of this very lemaisa question? I mean, this is, you have eggs laid on a farm, right? The egg was laid on Erev Yom Tov. It's now Yom Tov. The chick comes out. What do you do? So he says the Rif doesn't paskin it. "L'ach lishna da Omar Shmuel paligad de Rav hilchsa kerav v'hisure." So if I'm going to take the view that it was Shmuel as opposed to Rav Yochanan, then I'm going to follow Rav, because Rav versus Shmuel on Isurim, you follow Rav. So therefore, I would say 2 points for Rav if it's Shmuel. Uleidah Lishna, but according to the other version, the Amr of Yochanan, that is Rav Yochanan speaking, who the Palega Rav, Helchasak Rav Yochanan, when it's Rav versus Rav Yochanan is called the Basroi, he's the later authority, and Allah follows him over Rav. I'm sorry?
Rav Yochanan's the Rishoni?
Well, Eretz Yisrael anyway. But so was Rav originally.
Yeah, but he's... Well...
Rav makes you read that.
Although, the argument is originally from Bava, went to Israel, then came back.
Could be. Yesh poskin halacha k'rav, mishum detarti brisos kavasei. Some poskin the law follows Rav, because we have two brisos that support Rav in our sugya. Umishnas Rabbi Eliezer Kav Benaki. Further, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is known as being a great authority. He has everything clear. And as we already saw back on Dalet Amud Aleph, we're going to see it again here. He says that a chick is usher if it's hashed on Yom Tov. He has a separate discussion about chicks being usher even during the week because it's not yet fully formed. We'll see. We'll see what his problem is. The gam rab of Rabbi Yosef Dami Travayu might damage Shasik Rav. Alma Kaimi Kavasei. The fact that Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef support Rav, trying to defend his position, indicates that they believe he's right. So that's another point in favor of Rav. V'yeshapos can be Shmuel. On the other hand, we can go back with Shmuel. Mishun Rav Kahana Rav Asi Hikshua Debre Rav Shasik Lehu Rav. The fact is that he couldn't answer Rav Kahana Rav Asi, or he didn't answer. Looks like he couldn't answer. So therefore, we have a bunch of reasons to follow Rav, a couple of reasons potentially to follow Shmuel Rav Yochanan, either because it's Rav Yochanan who's battling Rav and he's Basroi, or because of Rav's silence. V'ha'gaonim pasku k'rav. So the Gaonim, he says, followed Rav and said, Osir. V'chein das Rav Alfasi. And that would be the Rif's position as well. Da'az lina l'chomor l'ha'chilim hizkir p'sah. That the answer is that he said, the Rif said, it's Osir, to be strict, and therefore you didn't need to paskin anything. You only need to paskin if you're going to say Mutter. If you're going to say Osir, there's nothing to be said.
Is that true about the Rif, that he always does that?
I don't know. Okay. Good question. V'avagad shasik lehu Rav, and granted Rav was silent, Harei Rav avitem Rav Yosef, tirtzu yafa kushes Rav Kahana Rav Asi. That's okay, because others came along and did give the answer. We got Mishnas Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Kavanaki, as we just said. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov's view is accepted because it is clean and straight. V'alacha kamoso and b'chol makom. And the halacha is going to follow him, on meaning Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, everywhere. So he ends up saying that indeed it seems the law follows Rav, and it is usher. The Rashba, in source Vav, discusses it. Linya Froshnal Biyomdo Pasku Agaonim Zal, like we saw already in the Rosh. Kirav, Mishum de Kaimel and Kirav the Isure, Bafil Manda Omar La Mishmed Rav Yochanan, even within the view that it was Rav Yochanan who disagreed, Ha'ika Rabba Vite Rabba, he has Rabba, but he should be Rabba, Vitam Rav Yosef, the Mashma de Kami Kabasei, we have Rabba and Rav Yosef who appear to agree with Rav. Midamri, my time of Shasik Rav, and the fact that they ask, why was Rav silent? V'acherim, however, other people, not Gaonim, pasku kishmuel. Mida kaimi Rav Kahana v'Rav Itchud v'Asi kavasei, because Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, they sided with Shmuel. Dak shuel edirav, meigel shnu levin atreifa. They asked that question. V'anu ein lanu ela kedibrei ha-Gaonim zal. He says, we're going to follow the Gaonim, and therefore say Aser. The Baal HaMa'or disagrees in Sur Zayin. He says, "Efrach shenolad biyomto plukta de Rabbi Shmuel b'tem Rabbi Yochanan." V'arivzal lo pasak v'hilchsak man. The Rif did not say whom he followed. Mishum b'istav kolei, because he wasn't sure. Midekamel and Rabbi Shmuel hilchsak Rav b'isuri, because on the one hand we follow Rav over Shmuel, but Kamel and Rabbi Yochanan all like Rabbi Yochanan, but we follow Rabbi Yochanan over Rav. V'nir alanu kevan diikra kahana bravasi disagri like Shmuel nakitin on the kula. He says, since Rav Kahana and Rav Asi agree with Shmuel, that's good enough to say, let's be lenient. So now we have on the one side, the Rosh and the Rashba and the Gaonim, and on the other side, the Baal HaMa'or.
The Baal HaMa'or was an expert on the Rif.
Yes. So in Source Ches, I just brought you the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch follows his view as well. He says, Asur, Mibnei Shu Moktza. And that pretty much closes the discussion. Once the Rambam is Kipaski and the Shulchan Aruch accepted.
So there's no question about Nolad or anything like that. Mibnei Shu are our people's thing, right?
Correct, because the view that it is Mutsa has won the day.
Right.
Yeah. One other note, though, within this, go back to the Gemara now with a Brisa they bring that closes the sugya. Tana Rabbanan. Right. You see that it's midway maze basically. If you see where the lines get wide and you go up from there about a dozen lines, Tana Rabbanan. Yeah. Efrach shenolad biyom tov aser. Brisa says, if a chick is hatched on Yom Tov, it's usher. Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, this is Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov the Rosh was referring to, af b'chol usher. He says, even a chick born on a Tuesday, a random Tuesday, is going to be usher. Doesn't make a difference. Why? Lefi shalonis patchu einav, because its eyes have not opened. Its eyes have not been opened. That's his statement.
Sure, it's still not a bar human one. right? It's not.
Well, take a look at Rashi. Rashi is at the top of the narrow lines. The Fishlan is Pat Choynav. He says, "V'isra b'le'isura," it is going to be expanded to be included in an isra, as we're going to see, from Kol Asheret HaShoreitz Ala Aretz Kidla Kaman, like the Gemara is going to say in another couple of lines. But the way Rashi is phrasing it, what does the isra sound like?
It's not
mokta because
it's close.
Oh, no.
It's a
sheret.
It's a kashrus.
Right. And it sounds like it's a deoraisa.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's a
sheret.
He's saying,
Mamash, it's a sheret. He's saying, I have a pasuk that includes this among the things they're not allowed to eat. That makes it a deoraisa.
Yeah.
So take a look in the Gemara now. The Gemara asks, Keman azla ha disanya, like whom is the following braisa, which says, the pasuk says in Parsha Shmini, L'chol hasheretz hashoretz al ha'aretz, that these creepy crawly creatures are prohibited to you, L'rabos efrochim shalonis pat chweneim, that this pasuk is meant to include the chicks that have not yet opened their eyes. So who is that like? Keman, probably Ezer ben Yaakov. End of sukkah. So, from there he says, the chick, until it opens his eyes, is actually going to be usur. Correct. Now take a look on your sheet at source test, please, the bottom of the first side.
So do you have...
Sorry?
No, I'll ask it later.
Okay. So the Gemara says, there, Omar Mar, they give you a quote from previously in that Gemara, Chelbon vechelmon me'urabin zebazet. If you have an egg that has the white and the yolk mixed together, and there isn't a clean division, you know that this comes from a creepy crawly creature. He says that's the nature of their eggs.
Snakes do have eggs.
I didn't look into this, you know, from the herpetological perspective to find out about lizard eggs. So worth looking at some point. But he says, you know that if there's no division between the white and the yolk, then this is a sheretz's egg, and therefore obviously non-kosher. So the Gemara says, l'mai hilchasa, for what purpose do we say this halacha, do we say that this is definitely a lizard's egg? So Amar of Ukva Bar Chama, lomar shim rikma v'nikva, Mitama b'cha adasha. He says, I'll tell you why. It's as far as Tumah is concerned. To teach me that if the embryo is formed inside, rokeim is a term we use in the Torah for embroidery. Maasei rokeim, with the curtains in the Mishkan. But it's used here to refer to where the embryo inside is no longer just water, but it's actually started to take shape. So if there is something of substance inside, there's a fetus inside this egg, and the egg gets a hole in it, so that someone touches whatever is inside, then it will communicate tuma, and the shear for it to communicate tuma will be like a creepy crawly creature, a sheretz, meaning the ka'adasha, with a lentil sized amount, because it's a sheretz. So the Gemara says, Maskif la Ravina. Ravina asks, V'dilma de nachashi? Well, maybe it's a snake egg, in which case the shear is not necessarily going to be ka'adasha. The Ka'adasha is for the Shmona Shratzim, specifically the eight creepy crawly creatures that are identified in the Torah. Choled, Chomet, Choled, Achbar, Tzav, that list. So he says, maybe this is a Nachash. So El Amar Rava, rather Rava says, you're right. It's not about Toma. What is it about? Shim Rikma Ve'achla, that if indeed the fetus inside had formed, and then someone ate the egg, lo ke'alea mishum sheretz hasheretz al ha'aretz, he will be liable for violating this pasuk.
When you say form, beginning to form.
Correct.
Not totally formed.
Correct. Iachis, and the Gemara asks, well, if so, my iria de tmeya, afilu de daharanami, that law that you would get lashes for eating this, has nothing to do with whether it's from a kosher species or a non-kosher species. The same rule would apply if I ate any egg that had a partially formed creature inside of it, even if it was from a chicken. Disanya, and he quotes the Braisa. Kol Asheretz Hashoretz Al Haaretz, L'Rabos Efrochim Shalonif Techoineim, that it includes chicks that have not yet opened their eyes, and that's the source for Eliezer Ben Yaakov in our Gemara. That includes the chicks that have not yet opened their eyes, so therefore, I don't need you to tell me this about the Sheretz. It doesn't matter whether it's a sheretz or not. It could be a sheretz and it could be a chicken. The same rule is going to apply.
So the usher eat an egg.
Well, we check the eggs for whatever.
But the fact is that it hasn't formed to the point where it's distinguishable between the yellow and the white.
Oh no, two different things. Two separate things. One is the business about the distinction between the yellow and the white wasn't about a chick or a creature having formed. It was saying that this is characteristic of lizard eggs, having nothing to do with the fetus having formed or not. The separate point they're making is that if there's a fetus inside, and fetus we're defining as something minimally formed, then it's usur under sheretz hasharetz. So the Gemara asks, what do you need to mention this at all for? It has nothing to do with kosher or non-kosher. Everything is usur.
Right.
So the Gemara answers, midirabbanan, who cross machta ba'alma. The truth is that brisa, that kol hasheretz hasharetz al haaretz, that if you eat an egg from a chicken, or you eat the chick that hasn't yet opened its eyes, that you're in violation of sheretz hasharetz al haaretz. The truth is that's a rabbinic prohibition. The pasuk that we quoted is simply a smacha. It's sort of linked to it, but it's not really from. That's actually not a true source for it. So that the question then becomes: what do we hold regarding eating a chick that you found inside an egg? Let's say the case happened. Right, chicken lays an egg. You get the egg, and you crack the egg open, and there was a chick inside of it. So what's the... Before we get to the question about a chick that actually hatches out and hasn't yet opened its eyes.
So is this a dead chick?
Yeah, let's talk a dead one.
Is that a tracer?
Oh.
Well, that's the question. What is this?
But if it hasn't yet opened its eyes, it sounds like it's not dead. It just,
it's not fully formed.
I'll tell you what. Flip the sheet and look at the Rambam. So I think it'll clarify things. The Rambam in Source Yud, Help us Machalos Asuras Per Gimel Halacha Tes. He writes, Beitzas Of Tamei. First of all, an egg from a non-kosher bird. Okay, robin's egg. Shehischil Ha'efroch Lisrakein Ba, where the chick started to form. Ba'achala, when you then ate it. Lo Gevishum Ochel Sheretz Ha'ov. So that's biblical lashes. That's easy.
That's because it was a trait bird to start with.
Correct. Then look at the second half. Aval, beitzas of tavor, if it's from a kosher bird, shehischil ha'froch lisrakein ba, and the chick started to form inside of it, ba'achala, and you ate it. The implication here is without shlita. I think that's fairly straightforward. Makin oso makas mardus, rabbinic lashes. That's all he's going to say. Yeah.
No, considered a sheretz in this case.
It is not considered a sheretz hasharetz. That was just an asmachta. The Bach discusses this issue on the tour. He asks the question of why it isn't called a nathel.
Right. Look at this next point.
Yeah. Might be a question.
Getting there.
What's the rabbinic prohibition exactly according to the Rambam?
So we don't know yet. Right now, all we know is that there is a rabbinic prohibition. We'll get to what it might be in a minute.
And when we say much earlier that an egg is muhammi bod yom, so if an egg is laid on Yom Tov, actually it's ready prepared the day before. What do we mean? Is it then?
But here we're talking about the chicken.
No,
the
egg.
The egg was laid three weeks ago, so to speak.
It
wouldn't be a
month. It's not fresh. It's really something that is already.
The egg is sitting on it for 3 days already.
What's the question that you're asking?
No, I'm just imagining how small or how particular this bird is inside of the chicken.
It's not completely formed. It's not alive. You can't do
shlita. It's a work in process.
Yeah. And we don't have a good definition here of what rikma is. We just know it means that there's something has formed. Beyond that, we don't know. So, although we will get a better idea of it soon.
But it's not like one of our eggs, because those never form anything. So it's something that is a potential of having something, or I don't want to say a miscarriage, but it's something. It was fertilized,
right.
But it doesn't turn into a maria. It doesn't turn into a recreation.
Well, that's where we're going. That's where we're going. So the next question you have to ask is, what about a chick that actually emerges from an egg?
Yeah.
Right. This was a chick found inside the egg.
Right.
So the Rambam writes in that second part there, Halachayud, Efroch shenolad, Am opishlan is patchu enav mutar laochlo. You're allowed to eat it. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch as well in Yerushalayim as love. during the week, not a Shabbos and Yom Tov law. He says, even before the eyes are opened, you are allowed to eat it.
So how do you deal with Rabbi Elazar Yaakov?
So what happens?
General Kalalba, his Mishnah, his braces are common up.
Yes, so what do you do with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? The Rabban knows Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So take a look at Source Yid Aleph, what the Bach has to say. Chasav Bagos Ashri, Perakam of the Yom Tov, that's our Gemara. You know that, right? I think we talked about this at one point, that Mesechus Beis is also known as Mesechus Yom Tov. So, Ukegon Shenolad Im HaKnafayim. He writes that it will only be permitted if it is born with its wings, meaning, Dainu, Nosa Gedola Sha'al Gufo Sheyesh Lo Kanim. He says, it means the large feathers that are on the body, the ones that have kanim. If you remember the way a feather works, it has like this reed sort of stem down. That's what he's talking about. D'chol ofo shelo gadlu knafayim asa Rabbeinu Yoel, because Rabbeinu Yoel, who is a Rishon, prohibited the birds that had not yet grown their wing feathers, mishum sheketz. Me'or Zeruah. Quoting the Or Zeruah, he said it's Asar as a Sheketz. What does that mean? So he explains. V'nira deratzalomer, the Asar mishum bal tishatzu. There is a prohibition against making yourself repellent. And this is one of the definitions of making yourself repellent, is eating this baby chick that hasn't even developed its wing feathers. That's just gross. Shari ein ha'olam ochlen oso mishum emilus. People don't eat it. It's disgusting. Kol zman shel gadlu knafayim shelahem, until the wings have already sprouted their feathers. V'hachi nachtinan, it says that's the halacha. So the way that Bach explains it, he now sheds some light on what we're talking about. Number one, this idea of the wing feathers. But number two, we're going to apply this backward to the discussion in the Gemara of Elazar ben Yaakov about whether it has opened its eyes or not. The chick that just came out of the egg, that is bald and hasn't opened its eyes and so on, that's under Bal Tishatzu, and therefore you aren't able to eat it. The Rambam says you don't have to have its eyes open, and that's brought in the Torah, and in the Shulchan Aruch, but the Baal says that's where you have feathers.
Where did he eat that in the way of the Or Zeruah? He did it in the Rambam.
The Or Zeruah doesn't
have to be in the Rambam. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar couldn't have told you that in the Fahim also, or Rabbi Elazar didn't have a choice of words to use it.
It is very odd, and it's considered a Chumrah. Does the Or Zeruah see the Rambam? I don't know. I believe he is Vienna, but I don't know. I don't know whether he has the Rambam. Right. It's probably an easy answer. I just don't know.
If you say Tosfos, no, it's just one Tosfos. It doesn't mean every Tosfos needs the Rambam.
No, well, the Rambam, it's a manuscript.
Right, right. No, I'm just saying that
the Tosfos is a different thing.
Yeah, probably the close once or twice the Rambam, but not.
But in terms of what we're seeing here, that's the idea. He's saying there is this idea that you have to have that threshold, and he can't believe the Rambam will say otherwise. The Shach on the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam's Heter. So the Shach says, yeah, some say, he's quoting this idea of the Bach and so on, that some do present this Chumrah of waiting until the feathers have formed under the Bal Tishaktsu rule.
But according to the Rambam, you might not have the Bal Tishaktsu
rule. It's all in how you read the Rambam.
Following the Rambam, how does he dispute the Rambam's Rambam?
In both comes first, the eye opening or the feathers?
I don't think you can tell from here.
Are you asking from a phenomenological perspective?
Yes.
I don't know. I thought you were asking maybe what happens if it has one side and not the other.
But it could be that, according to the Rambam, the feathers don't matter because the eyes are earlier than the feathers.
Right. I want to look into the lizard egg thing with the yolk and the white. And I also want to look into the question of what happens here in terms of the eyes opening versus the feathers forming. My gut is that the eyes have to be first.
Yeah.
Just because it takes time for feathers to form. Like, how long is this thing going without its eyes open?
I think they hatchery is closed.
How long have they lost certain feathers? Then other feathers come on.
One case is no one's already, and the question is open its eyes.
When they're born,
the other case is he's born with its confinement.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
But the Lushan is very strange. But the Lushan indicates, at least in this context, is when the Rambam paskins, he says afrosh nolad afal pishal nipul einav, means it's nolad already, and
you're
it
right.
has to open its eyes after it's been nolad.
You're right.
And the second case is kugon shel nolad im haknafayim.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. I don't know.
So I'm not sure how the Yerodei addresses the Rambam at all.
Yes, no, believe me, I'm going to look into both of these. I think this is an interesting question with a potential impact on how we're going to read this Rambam.
Right.
How do you shift a little chick like that? You don't need a knife or a chicken, right? Just like a finger.
No, we don't
do
it. Can't do Malik anymore. That's for the.
And it's also a car side. It's also a long side. Don't gesture at yourself.
Yeah, he can't do Malik. Malik is only.
So yeah.
Now they get all the
shoot. Only the base makers.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you can't use this
unless you're doing a car.
Okay, so that's the break point in the Gemara. They then get into a new discussion about when the egg is said to be formed, and it's going to have to explain what this means. But the idea is going to be that at a certain point, an egg makes a transition from being partially formed to being fully formed. I'm just looking at it and asking myself if we want to start on that.
How do we know we pass him like the bosom and Yaakov? I mean, where is there?
It's a Gemara in Erevin, if I remember correctly, that says halacha because his mission is Kavanaki. I think it's Erevin.
Where's the Yaakov here?
He was the one who made the he was also an Argamar, who was Afbachol Aser in the middle of the Yom Adar.
Seems though that he would make the comparable that they will both be equivalents, right? I mean, Motza, he's saying the first case is Motza, there's two halachas. Would it be like him to mix and match one being a Deraisa and one being a Durabana?
Why would he be mixing?
What is he, what the Yaakov Motza is?
Oh, you mean because he's saying...
He's saying, after Mutter, would he say, Asrani?
Yeah.
So wouldn't he make them on...
Not if he's responding to someone. Someone told him, or someone asked him, is it Asr on Yom Tov? And his answer is, it's Asr even during the week.
I understand, but he didn't need to answer that. He's only asking him about Yom Tov.
Once he says that, he has avoided the whole discussion about Yom Tov. He's saying, what are you asking me about Yom Tov for? It'll be us if it was a random day, too.
No, because it's a smaller subset of condition. Yom Tov could be a long day, and by that time his eyes open. The chick is born at the beginning of Yom Tov, later in the day.
But then it's not ready. It wasn't ready. It was Muktzah.
It was Muktzah, right, because
even inside the Yek, it was still Aser. We were saying it was Aser even in the
Yek. Right, of course, because it's Muktzah anyway.
Yeah.
Is Rebozim Yaakov, is the riff silent about Rebozim Yaakov as well?
Let's look.
Well, no, we don't even have the little thing where they bring down the din.
On what?
On the Ayin Mishpat, and that shows
that... You do. On Abachol Aser, you see that base?
You do have.
The base that's in the brackets?
Yeah. But it's a bracket.
He refers to it as a Shulchan Aruch. Right, because...
It has a base in brackets here. This is a different base.
Correct. No, but in Chulin, I think he...
Yeah.
Well, you know why he won't. I'm sorry. No. You know why he won't refer you to it. Because the Rambam is passing against it. Until you get to the Bach, the Rambam is passing against it. So, yeah, that's why.
He doesn't bring it down. It's on...
he doesn't bring it?
Duff Gimel Ahmed Beis.
What's also interesting is they use different terms. When we talk about the eyes, he's talking about sheretz. When we talk about the knafayim, he's talking about sheketz.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same Easter also.
Well, we borrowed a pasuk that uses sheretz, sheretz hasheretz. But we're using it as an asmachta true, and we're linking it to Baal Teshaktsu, which is then the language of sheketz. Yeah. So what do we have here? No, he doesn't quote him here.
Yeah, it just had a run dealing with the issue of shtika on the riff.
Right. On the other halacha. Yeah. Okay. Good. We'll pick up with that, God willing, next week.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, really,